Working on a study in the Gospel of John. Last time we were in chapter 11, which records the raising of Lazarus. The raising of Lazarus is the climax in the completion of the signs that Jesus does. And when Jesus does that sign of the raising of Lazarus, that also seals the decision for the Jews, especially the Jewish leaders who are in opposition to Jesus. When that raising of Lazarus happens and they hear about it, they make their decision, Jesus has to go. And from then on, through the rest of the gospel, they are making plans to kill him. They are seeking opportunity to get rid of Jesus. Well, that's chapter 11. Chapter 13 is going to open with Jesus' hour has come, a very important concept in John. Jesus is going to say, knowing that his hour had come. There's been several times in John in the earlier chapters where there's been reference to the hour, but the hour has not yet come. And so Jesus deflects some things and defers some things because his hour was not yet. But in chapter 13, that awaited hour has arrived. And when that hour comes, Jesus is going to wash the feet of his disciples. He's going to send out his betrayer to do what his betrayer is going to do. He's going to give a long discourse to his disciples, the longest by far in the gospel, called the farewell discourse. So he gives a long discourse to his disciples. That's where he gives the new commandment, talks about the promise of the Spirit and what will take place when the Spirit comes. Then he prays for his disciples, John chapter 17. And then after that, the story moves to the betrayal, to the arrest, to the trial, and on to the crucifixion and the burial and the resurrection and the resurrection appearances of Christ. So between the raising of Lazarus in chapter 11, which is that final sign, which also then precipitates all those events of the betrayal and arrest and crucifixion of Jesus, between that raising of Lazarus and the coming of Jesus' hour in chapter 13, you get chapter 12. And chapter 12 sets the stage for the climactic events of the end. Chapter 12 tells of the last interaction that Jesus has with the public. After chapter 12, Jesus is no longer public, except when they gather and all say, crucify him, public in that sense. But chapter 12 is kind of the closing scenes of Jesus' public ministry. And after that, it's behind closed doors, so to speak, until the actual crucifixion. And chapter 12 tells of various responses that are made by people to Jesus, and various responses made to Jesus' ministry. So that's what's in chapter 12. Today, we're going to consider just one of the responses recorded in chapter 12, one of the responses that's made to Jesus in his ministry. And it'll be a little bit different as far as like the intention of my own heart today. I'm not really trying to teach you anything. Usually I am, whether I'm successful or not. Usually that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not really trying to teach you anything today. Rather, I want to get you to wonder about something. I want to make you wonder whether maybe you should, in your own response to Jesus, in your own response to Jesus' ministry, do something similar to what we read about today in John chapter 12. That's what I want you to get to consider. Whether you, perhaps in your own response, should do something similar to the response we read of in chapter 12. And the response that we're going to look at in chapter 12 is that story of Mary anointing Jesus with perfume. And I want you to consider, should you, in your response to Jesus, do something like what Mary did? You know, should your own commitment to Jesus, should your own devotion to Jesus, should your own following to Jesus include something similar to what Mary does in her devotion and following and commitment to Jesus in chapter 12? Now, in all four of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, we encounter a story in each one of those Gospels of Jesus being anointed. The stories in Matthew and in Mark are very similar to each other. They're probably working to get their together on their assignment. So their stories are very similar. They tell a story of an anointing in Bethany at the end of Jesus' ministry. And though there's some variation in the telling of their story from John's account, I think it's the same story. So Matthew, Mark, and John are versions of the same story. And Matthew and Mark are very close to each other. Luke tells a story of an anointing of Jesus, and he sets the story in an earlier time in Jesus' ministry. And it takes place in an unnamed city. He doesn't tell us where it takes place. And the woman who anoints Jesus is called a sinner a couple times, at least by the perspective of others there at the event. And the focus of the story in Luke tends to be on a conversation between Jesus and the Pharisee who's hosting the dinner where the woman who's a sinner anoints him. If that's the same story as in the other three Gospels, it's told with kind of considerable difference as far as focus and emphasis. Personally, if you want to know my opinion, I think it's a different story. But you can think whatever you like. And whether it's the same story or not, we're not going to kind of reference Luke much today. So first, I just want you to see here's the story in John. Response of Mary to Jesus. Jesus, therefore, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they made him a supper there, and Martha was serving, but Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table with him. Mary then took a pound of very costly perfume of pure nard, and anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, who was intending to betray him, said, "Why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and given to poor people?" Now he said this not because he was concerned about the poor, but because he was a thief. And as he had the money box, he used to pilfer what was put into it. Therefore Jesus said, "Let her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For you always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me." So there's John's account. Here's Matthew's account. You see it's chapter 26, which is again very near the end. When Jesus had finished all these words, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming and the Son of Man is to be handed over for crucifixion. Then the chief priests and the elders of the people were gathered together in the court of the high priest named Caiaphas, and they plotted together to seize Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they were saying, not during the festival, otherwise a riot might occur among the people." So it's the same setting as John, same time. Now here's the story. Now when Jesus was in Bethany, at the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster vial of very costly perfume. She poured it on his head as he reclined at the table. But the disciples were indignant when they saw this and said, "Why this waste? For this perfume might have been sold for a high price and the money given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you bother the woman? For she has done a good deed to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me. For when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be spoken of in memory of her." It's the only thing in all of scriptures that says wherever the gospel goes, this story will go in accompaniment with it. So this story of Mary's response. At the end of Matthew's account, the story says, wherever the gospel is preached, the story of this response will go with it. I think that suggests that something of this response, you know, made by this woman, made by Mary, is an appropriate response when the gospel comes and when the gospel is preached. Something about the response that she makes, it's good. It's fitting. So wherever the gospel goes, this story is going to go with it because this is an appropriate and good response to make. So again, just to set you up, I want you to consider, you know, should your own response to Jesus, should your own response to hearing the gospel preached include something comparable to what's recorded here in the story? Now, none of us is going to do exactly as Mary did, are we? None of us is going to go to a dinner party and pour perfume over Jesus. The opportunity for that has passed. So you're not going to do exactly what she did. But consider, in your own response to Jesus, in your own response to the gospel, should your response be marked by, be characterized by some of the same things that characterize and mark Mary's response? So all I'm going to do here, again, I'm not going to kind of attempt so much to teach the passage, I'm just going to highlight some of the elements which are part of the response, part of the story. And then if we do the same as Mary, I think elements in our own story would kind of like, that sounds just like what Mary did. There would be a match between those. So just maybe just highlight some elements. I got seven of them. So first, what Mary does is not the same thing as either Lazarus or Martha. Both Lazarus and Martha are at the meal. It's at Simon the leper's house. Lazarus is reclining at the table with Jesus. That's pretty cool, right? To be able to say, I went to dinner with Jesus, you know. We sat and chatted. Well, that's pretty cool. So Lazarus is kind of a guest of honor. Well, he just got raised from the dead. That puts you in the limelight. So he gets to recline at table. That's a very special thing. Martha, typical of Martha, she's serving. So she's serving Jesus. That's very admirable. That's very important. That's a very good thing to do, to serve Jesus. But I just want you to notice that what Mary does is an identical or the same thing as what either Lazarus is doing or what Martha is doing. So we're not talking, as far as a response, about communion with Jesus. That's what Lazarus is doing. That's a very great thing to have, be sit there and have table fellowship with Jesus, to have communion with him. That's a very great thing. But that's not what Mary's doing. Nor is Mary doing the same thing as Martha, just serving Jesus. You know, she's not running around kind of helping out, you know, getting things done that Jesus needs done. So we're not talking about either communion with Jesus or service to Jesus. What Mary does is closer to worship than it is either to fellowship or service. But it isn't just bowing in reverence either, is it? It's not like she just bows her head and worships the Lord or adores the Lord, because there's too much spending and there's too much giving and there's too much acting for it to be just worship. But it's closer to that act of devotion that she does. So I just want you to note that something in the response is not just service, it's not just fellowship, it's something else. Second, Mary does something with very costly perfume. It says it's worth 300 denarii. From the book of Matthew, we learned that a denarius is what you make in a day. So 300 things that you make in a day, if you take out Sabbaths and holy days, that's what you make in a year. So what this thing costs are the wages for a whole year. You don't have to overly think the matter to realize you can't give very many gifts that cost you a whole year's salary, can you? How many times a year can you give such a gift? Once, you know, and then that's living pretty slim yourself, right? So you can't, this is kind of a gift that by its very nature is very limited and exclusive because it's too expensive to give very often. But it is, it's something very costly. It's a whole year kind of labor and of life. So it's just very expensive. So that's in there somehow, just that it's very costly perfume, a whole year's worth. And again, I just want you to know, you can't give such extravagant gifts very often or to very many people. You know, I can't give, if I gave you a gift equivalent to that, kind of like how many people are here, it'd take me quite a few years, right? If I'm going to give each one of you a gift that's worth a whole year's wages. It's also the thing that she gives is called called in John pure nard. It's very costly perfume of pure nard. The word for pure in Greek is actually faithful. It's the same word from which we get faith and faithful. I think the point of that is not to kind of like bring in some spiritual nuance or something. It's to point out that it's the good stuff. You know, this is like the real deal. It's not expensive junk. You know, it's not an $80,000 Yugo, you know, that Mary's working with. It's not, you know, $100,000, you know, toaster for the Pentagon. It's not that kind of thing. It's the pure nard thing. It's the top of the line. It's the best. You know, it's the kind of thing that you're going to be able to say, I don't care how much money you spend, you can't find something better than this. So like, if suppose it was a fishing reel. You know, I could give you that fishing reel and I would say to you, I don't care how much money you spend, this is the best that there is. It's that kind of gift. It's pure nard. It's the good stuff. It's top of the line. It's the best you can buy. It's the best that there is. So that's in there. Then you get this feet and hair stuff. Matthew speaks of Jesus' head being anointed. But John talks of it being poured over his feet, and Mary wiping his feet with her hair. I mean, she's got a whole, probably 12 ounces of stuff, so she could probably, you can douse somebody with a whole can, right? So what actually happened as far as how did she anoint him? But Matthew calls attention that she poured it on his head. John calls attention that she poured it on his feet and then wipes them with her hair. You know, for a woman to let down her hair in public at that time was itself a questionable activity, but obviously she lets down her hair and wipes his feet. I just want you to know how very personal that is. It is a public happening, so it's, you know, I had dinner at somebody's house, but it's very personal. It makes her very vulnerable. It's very intimate. You know, it's obviously something subject to misinterpretation and misunderstanding about what's going on here. You know, if you anoint somebody's head, you anoint somebody's head with oil, that's a very royal thing. That's a very stately kind of thing. It's a coronation, and probably some of what Matthew was after in his account is, that's a coronation of the one who's king. It's anointing him as king, even though it's preparation for his burial. If I had somebody come up here right now and we anointed your head with oil, you know, that's kind of, ooh, that's cool. It can be kind of stately and elegant and royal. But, you know, just come up here and anoint your feet and wipe them with my hair, then you all would shift in your seats, right? It's uncomfortable. What's going on here? So, but just notice kind of it's very intimate, very personal. But also, there's a significant and a large contrast between her hair and his feet. I mean, the hair, 1 Corinthians 11, is the glory of a woman. It's the glory of a woman to have long hair. One of my favorite verses. No. But it's the highest part of a woman is her hair. You know? And even today, if we were to survey this room, the women spent more time getting their hair ready for today than the men did, right? So, you know, this is the glory part for a woman, but the feet are the lowest, humblest part, right? So it's her hair, her glory, in his feet. And she's okay for kind of her glory to serve the humblest, least attractive thing of Jesus. So I just want you to note that. Fifth thing. The aroma fills the house. I like this one. What the others see, or they struggle with, because it's so expensive, and it's poured on Jesus, and then she's wiping his feet with her hair. What they see, they struggle with, and it's kind of disagreeable to them. But what they smell is sweet and wonderful, because the aroma fills the whole house for everybody that's there. I just think that's a neat thing. I mean, do you ever meet somebody whose life just smells nice? It's a possible thing. And you can meet people whose life smells otherwise, too. And you think, what makes for that smell of that person's life. Well, here, what Mary does just fills the whole house with kind of a sweet and pleasing aroma. Number six, the response of others. John records the response of Judas, who is about, of course, ready to betray Jesus. So you might not want to put a lot of weight on Judas's response, but maybe he represents how those who, you know, aren't much committed to Jesus see such a response. But Matthew speaks of kind of the disciples just generally and how the disciples responded. And the assessment in both cases of the others is, why this waste? So they question the validity and the value of what Mary did. They don't quite get it. And what they see, it's way too extravagant, way too costly. Did you have to use that much perfume or whatever it is they thought? They saw it as wasteful. And Mary bears some reproach because of it. Mark says explicitly that they reproach her. And then it gets pointed out that it could have been spent in ways more helpful for meeting people's needs. It's an interesting thing. You know, you could have taken such a gift and spent it on ways that were better for meeting the needs of people all around you, meeting the needs of the poor. Judas, of course, is also thinking that it could have been spent in ways that made for more personal gain. That, too, I think, is an interesting point. Like, okay, if you could make such a response and you could do it in ways that just made for more personal gain. Got more in your own pocket at the end of the day. So it's seen as wasteful. And it's pointed out, if you're really trying to meet people's needs, there's better ways to do it. And you can be more effective at it. And you could do it in such a way that resulted for more personal gain for yourself. So there's number six. And number seven, beforehand. That she anoints Jesus beforehand in preparation for his burial. That what Mary did was not dictated by circumstances. I want you to note that. She's anointing him for burial, but he's not yet dead. If he were dead, well, okay, fine, he's dead. He's gone to dump some expensive stuff on him. Okay, we can see that. You know, you could defend it more. But to do it beforehand dramatically increases the risk, doesn't it? It's like me sending you a baby card before you're pregnant. Something like that, kind of like the beforehand card, like there's a lot more risk in it, right? And for here, that you know, Mary anoints him before and for his burial, what if, you know, the risk is there often, kind of like, what if Jesus kind of had agreed with the disciples and with Judas? You know, what if he had said, you don't need to anoint me. I mean, I've already told you I'm going to rise again in 3 days. I don't need a bunch of expensive stuff spent on me. And what if he had said that to Mary? So there's risks in doing it beforehand, and that part of kind of like you can't take your cues from circumstances because the circumstances are not yet there that would dictate such action. So, you know, those are things, there's maybe even more, but those are things I just wanted to highlight that are elements of the response that Mary makes to Jesus and to Jesus' ministry. So just consider, should something in your response, your following, your devotion to Jesus be like Mary's? Maybe that's something you already know about. Maybe it's something yet to come. I'm not going to even try to give examples. I feel like I could generate some, but I'm not going to try to. But if I do something similar to Mary, if you do something similar to Mary, now you know this, it'll be expensive. Maybe that's the expense is actual money. Or maybe it's something else. But I do know it'll be very costly. So costly that it's something you can't give easily and you can't give it often. It just costs too much to do that. If there's something in your own response like Mary's, it'll be about good stuff. You know, it won't be for Jesus the stuff that you have set aside for goodwill. You know, it'll be pure nard. It'll be high quality. If this were a time thing and the choice was between quality time and amount of time, it's definitely on the quality side, right? I mean, it's good. It's the best that there is. Something in your own response, it might be for his feet, but you're okay to wipe his feet with your hair. So something that's kind of like a glory for you, an honor for you, but it's just for his feet. Others are going to say it's wasteful. They're going to tell you that you could meet more needs if you did such and such. And more personal gain could be realized if you, distributed your resources in this way or whatever. But that others, not only the Judases, but perhaps other disciples. So if you did have something like this and you came up to me afterwards and said, Roger, what do you think of this as maybe a response similar to Mary's? What do you think about that? I might go, seems kind of wasteful to me. That other disciple might say that to you. I'm like, well, it's, too expensive, too much, too over the top. And there's lots of poor people out there, lots of needs. I'm the pastor of LCF. I kind of like would like you to do stuff that meets more needs of LCF. It's a little bit wasteful on Jesus' side, We need somebody to head up the such and such thing. So others might see it as wasteful. It's not something demanded by circumstances. And so there's a great deal of risk. Like gambling, making yourself vulnerable. But it fills the house with sweet smells. It's kind of the aroma that it leaves for others to smell that are there. And then maybe Jesus himself will defend you as others reproach you and say, you know what? She or he done a good thing for me. And if you get such a defense made by Jesus, it was worth it, right? So to have Jesus say this was good. And Mary does something that nobody else does. She anoints Jesus in preparation for his burial the first day of the week when people come with spices to anoint Jesus' body. He's not there because he's risen. So they come too late. Mary is the only one who actually anoints him. So I'm not going to try to give examples. I just want you to consider, is there something in your own response that should have some of these elements? Wherever the gospel is preached, this story gets told. I think it's appropriate response to Jesus, to the gospel. So we're going to close the service with communion.